So before we understood this idea of claims-based identity, of outsourcing authentication somewhere else, and that's like the basic idea, the inductive base. Now we needed to do the step. Let's say that we needed to understand a bit better how we can use those tools for describing the world, the scenarios that we have, and actually manage the various identity challenges that we have in those. So I'm going to go more in details about security token services, not necessarily into the implementation, though I know that a lot of you guys would like it, but we'll see some implementation, but that's just as a function of understanding how those guys can be useful. Like in a normal case, you are better off in buying something like these in a package. And then we'll look at patterns, ways in which we can use those guys for solving our scenarios. During the break, I got a lot of questions that are kind of answered by using those patterns. So that's good. So we'll talk about federation. We'll actually play a bit with it, with WIF. And we'll talk about the home realm discovery. How many of you are familiar with the home realm discovery problem? Yeah, look at that. A lot of people. Great. So we will not solve it, but we'll show you how to solve it. And we'll also define it as a problem. And then we'll, depending on the time left, usually there's not much because this is something that elicits a lot of questions. But you never know. We may end up talking about other scenarios that are kind of solved in the same way in which we solve home realm discovery. And then we may actually end up saying some details about how WIF does things. So before we go forward, do you guys have questions from this morning? Okay, perfect. I assume that everything was wonderfully clear. Security token services. Again, as I mentioned this morning, this is just pure service orientation. I have some resources that I use in the context of authentication, and I just happen to enclose them in this event horizon. Let's say that I have no other way of talking with those resources if not by using the contract which I establish. Contract which happens to be based on an open standard. And basically, the definition of a security token service is just this. It's an endpoint which can actually issue tokens upon successful authentication. And we'll see that authentication can have different flavors. Note, you may come from different backgrounds, and you may call this entity in a different way. However, I'm confident that whatever protocol you use, you will recognize artifacts that behave in the same way as STS. So, for ease of communication, I will keep using STS. How do you decide the flavor of STS? According to various parameters. The first obvious one is the protocol. That's to say that you can have different protocols in which you have something that gives you token according to your authentication. And those are typically WS Trust. How many of you heard of WS Trust? Almost everybody. How many of you heard of WS Federation? Fantastic. How about SAML Protocol? Fantastic. That's one of the few times in which we are more popular than SAML Protocol. That's great. Thank you guys for being here. And also, we'll see that the STS is a tool that can be an instrument, that can be at the service of different roles. So far, we implicitly spoke about the identity provider role. We'll see in a short that we also have another, which is the federation provider. One interesting property of STSs is that they can provide authorization, implicit authorization. Like, if I need a token for accessing one application, if somehow I can embed in the STS the logic that decides you get a token, you don't get a token, according to the fact that I'm authorized or not authorized to access that resource, here you go. You externalized authorization, And now you can actually rely on that for doing a lot of a job. Then, of course, certain things will always have to take place at the endpoint. Like if, for example, you have a claim that says a spending limit, if you don't see how much you are trying to spend, you cannot do the authentication. And the VSTS doesn't see that. The VSTS just sees authentication, doesn't see the body of your call. So the authorization you do here is pretty coarse, but authorization nonetheless. Here there is the little secret of all these. The vast majority of the problems are solved by picking the right STS. Like there are different STSs, like we'll see where we'll have different endpoints and similar. Typically, the solution is to make sure that your application gets stuff from the right endpoint. And we'll see in practice what that means. Okay. So let's formalize what we already saw. What we saw so far is the IP STS. An IP STS is one STS, so one web service or one web page which acts as a web service, which is at the service of one identity provider. An identity provider is an abstract role, like the Department of Licensing is an identity provider. They may not have an STS which helps them to express that role in the context of one transaction, but they are an identity provider nonetheless. The STS is the tool that they use for doing their job. So there is a difference between the two. But depending on the things that the role needs to do, these will induce characteristics on the STS in itself, which is why when one STS works for one identity provider, we can talk about IP STSs. But and you can find in literature, but you can also find just STS alone, in which case you disambiguate from the context. And typically, it does exactly what we said so far. You have something that allows you to authenticate users, and we just put a facade in front of it. Very often, the code of STS and the way in which you actually perform authentication are really not related. Actually, the less they are related, the better. Because the STS in itself has the code for manufacturing the token. But that code maybe is called just after successful authentication took place. So the part that actually performs authentication may be infrastructure, like could be Kerberos, it could be membership provider, who cares? In theory, you can just get the code that performs the job of STS, like receives the incoming identity, manufacture a token, and just host it in whatever system you have, so that the two things are kind of orthogonal. And in fact, like, easy mechanism, you make a call, you use some kind of credential, which could be both at the transport level, Kerberos, X509, whatever, or it could also be at a higher level, like maybe sending username and password using a username and password token. So it's still a token, not issued, but. And you check authentication. If you're happy with that, you extract the claims, and you render a token which contains them. So far, nothing strange, right? This one is the other animal. Is a what we call a resource STS, or relying party STS, or federation provider STS. So those are many different names you can find in literature. Typically, I use these just because it's short and I'm lazy. But you can find all of those. They all mean the same things. In the end, if you just look at the mechanics of one STS, one STS is something that receives a token in some form and gives you another token in another form. Think of what I said before, in which the credentials could just come in a token which contain credentials themselves. And looking from outside and not looking into the details of the two tokens, this entity is just a black box which transforms tokens. So if we know that we are sending credentials and so we are looking up people, or application, or whatever, that's an IP STS. If instead we just do pure transformation, let's say that we receive a token, we launch whatever logic we have, and we render another token which could contain exactly the same claims, or contain transformed claims, or contain claims in which I enriched with further information. Whatever will happen here, I don't know. Then we call this guy a resource STS. The reason for which we call that is that very often, this is one STS that instead of knowing about identities, instead of being like a cap that I put on top of identity provider, this is something that actually knows about the resource that we are trying to access. And in fact, it's a kind of a impedance matcher. That's to say that if a token that I'm receiving, for some reason, cannot be digested as is from my application, well, this guy can actually do something about it and transform it as appropriate. Where does their STS live? It lives typically at the boundaries, on the frontiers. That's to say that it is useful for decoupling your application from the work of trusting multiple identity providers, for example, so that your application just trusts one entity, which is this STS, so expects a token of this flavor. And then this point can actually accept tokens from different identity providers. So you successfully decoupled your application from the hassle of managing relationships. Or, again, in places in which the semantic of those claims cannot be consumed as is, or even just the format. Maybe my partner is from a different country, use a different locale. My application needs these claims in my locale, and so I may actually perform transformations. Or imagine that for privacy reasons, your application must know if your user is older than a certain age for authorizing access to content, and I left it to your imagination what this could be, voting applications probably, but it cannot have personal identifiable information, such as, for example, the birth date. So if you think of a situation before in which you had your user that was actually using the driving license, the driving license can be used for establishing age, but it also reveals too much about the user. It's telling the birth date. If you'd have a resource STS in the middle, you could receive the birth date and send back instead, transform into a Boolean, which just says he's of age. At that point, this guy would take care of that. Your application would not have to worry about the liability of knowing personal identifiable information. Or you could do more interesting things. Let's say that you are of age at 21 when you are in the States, but you are of age when you are 18 in Italy. So here I could receive birth date and country, and here I could have the logic for doing this transformation, and so on and so forth. You see my point. And of course, you can also do it like at lower level. Like you could have your global set of claims for your organization. You could have HR, finance, production line, all those departments, all of them using different roles, because that's normal. Like the job of being an HR person is very different from being an engineer. At that point, the roles that you have are different, but if you use those things, you can actually like easily transform between each other. You can group different applications, and so on and so forth. So that's the resource STS. Why? What does FP means? Let's see if somebody knows. Federation? Provider. Almost. This is actually like, as the IP STS is one STS used in the context of one identity provider, like the tool that the identity provider uses for expressing its role in a transaction, here is an STS which is used in the context of a federation provider. That's to say, one entity which is on the receiving end of the other side. So not really a resource, but something that sits on a group of resources and is the place where organizational trust takes place. We'll see that in a moment. So let's introduce some notation. Let's say that this one is the code of your application. The code. And let's say that this halo around it is the influence area of the application in itself. So, for example, the web config or the policies are not properly the code, but they are still owned by the application, of course. Like, the owner is the same. In this context, let's indicate the store that we use for authentication and the code that we use for authentication. So if this would be like a membership provider website, this would be the SQL database which contains the members, and this would be the code that we are using for accessing that. And then, here, authorization or attributes, code that deals with attributes, roles, or whatever else, and the store that we use for that. I'm keeping the two things separated because very often your problem is an authentication problem. Like, we call all these claims identity because we need a moniker, like a soundbite, so that people think of that with one single word. But the reality is, very often you will not care about claims. Like, you just want single sign-on, for example. And single sign-on doesn't necessarily carry claims together with it. So, now I will make various considerations about this side. Just know that you can always attach those guys here. Like, whatever I do for these, I can also do for these guys. And for these, I will have also different considerations later. But what's important to know is, if I want to piggyback claims in this area, I can always do it, but I'm not forced to. So here you have your application, traditional application clearly, because it still owns these parts and still has to deal with these guys. So we want to externalize authentication. But to whom? Well, it's not really always our choice. Let's say that if this application is for your resellers, or if this application is for your employees, or whatever, like, the choice is induced by whoever already owns those accounts. Like, it's not that we can ask people to just mushroom identity providers around. We have to work with what is in there. So let's make various hypotheses. Let's say that your application is not for your own people. Let's say you are an ISV. How many of you are actually ISVs? 1, 2, 3, 4. So you are familiar with let's say that you are just exposing these for others. And let's say that you have just one customer, maybe a very good one, so don't feel bad, but for the time being, just one customer. So here you have just the paradigmatic situation in which you absolutely have one identity provider. And with this arrow, I indicate trust. Let's say that my application trusts this identity provider. What does that mean? I can get rid of the authentication, and I rely on that. One case. Slightly more interesting case, I have more than one customer. So business is growing. And now I have two choices. One brute force obvious choice is doing this, from this application trusting both. Well, I'll have you know that WIF doesn't make that very easy to do. Let's say that the WIF model usually uses just one. But also because it makes sense from the architectural perspective. However, that's possible. Anyway, for what we have seen before, that's probably not the best way of doing this. Because if I introduce this little guy in the middle, this resource STS, now, from the logical perspective, I can say that this is one single entity, like not necessarily a domain, like I could be using a hoster, I don't care. But anyway, if now I introduce this guy, now, from others, that is like the face of my organization. And so when they establish trust, they do it with this guy. Like, in other words, if this, instead of being an ISV, would be like Microsoft, when partners federate, they would see one specific endpoint, and they would federate with that. And then my application can happily trust just this guy. At that point, I am decoupled. Let's say that when I write code here, I always expect tokens coming from here. But this guy can happily multiplex, deplex, whatever you want to call it, across any number of identity providers, which is great both for the relationship management and also for decoupling, because maybe here I have a manager role and here I have one administrator role, but here I may have gold member versus a copper member. And maybe here I have logic that says, if you come from here, manager equal gold. If you come from here, administrator equal gold. So again, I push out all this stuff and I'm done. That's the case in which we are like, we assume that the identity is owned by somebody else. So let's say that instead, you actually expect also your employees to be able to call here. So you're not just an ISV, but you actually own your own organization. So at that point, before here, this was completely empty. You had no users whatsoever. Now instead, you have users which live on this side of a fence. And you want those users to access this guy. So what can you do? Surprise! Nothing prevents you from playing more than one role. So this one is one STS, which may have more than one endpoint. So I could use endpoints which accept, for example, some more tokens for just decoupling in the case in which identities are coming from the identity providers. But then I could also have an endpoint which accepts Kerberos and manufacture tokens for my own users. At that point here, I have both an identity provider and a federation provider, and I have STSs of both flavors. Are you with me so far? Very straightforward. And in fact, ADFS allow you to do exactly that. Like when you have ADFS in place, you can actually have it play both roles. You can have it be your federation provider and manage relationship with people outside. You can also have it as your identity provider and actually issue tokens. From the application, what changes? Nothing. Perfect. And that's the entire reason for which we are doing all this. Now, let me clean up a bit all this ink. Let's say that, let's go back to the ISV case. And let's say that you cannot rely on your customer to have those capabilities. Let's say that a priori you have no idea of what the customer is capable to do. And so, for example, they may be unable to be federated, like they'd be unable to give you tokens. So you may still have to own this stuff. However, it has still value to represent this as an STS. Because even if you own it, it's always nice to use federated identity, service orientation. That's to say that here, by representing this as an STS, you are guaranteeing that the identity here can actually, how to say, roam. In a traditional case in which this guy is just a database in the sphere of influence of his application, well, all the identities there are absolutely prisoners. That's to say that the only way of using them is authenticating with this app. Now, if I put an STS on top of this, guess what? If I have another app, now I can actually trust it. At that point, again, imagine the ISV situation in which you install this on the premises of your customer. The next application that you install, it doesn't need any of the sort. That's to say that you can just trust the former instance of this application. And then you reuse all the users. Guess what? You get for free single sign-on. Because at that point, since you are authenticated with this guy, we'll see later the mechanics, but you just go straight, and if you are logged in this guy, if you try to come here, you are logged in already, and the same in the opposite direction. Let's say that your customer grows somehow, or you discover that they do have an identity provider. switching from trusting your own little thingy to this guy is one line of configuration. Instead, imagine taking this database, shoving your hand in the code, ripping out all the connections that you're doing, all the queries that you're doing, and then trying to adapt it to this. So this stuff is the way to go for modeling systems. Questions? So the question is which endpoints the STS exposes. So which STS are we talking about? ADFS? So STS in general is just like general concept. There is no fixed way of implementation. Every implementation will be different. So ADFS expose various flavors of WS Federation, various flavors of WS Trust, various flavors of XAML protocol in a Cartesian product with various different credential types. Username and password, Kerberos, certificates, and in general, whatever it can be done with Active Directory, plus XAML tokens. So in the case in which you are receiving stuff, you can use whatever token that we supported.
So when you say different flavor of, let's say, XAML or different flavor of WS Federation, can you give me an example, active versus passive? Or?
Okay, so the question is, what do I mean by different flavors of WS Trust? So specifications have dates, like people get together, they make the protocol, and then they put a little version number, they publish it on the internet, and ta-da, you have an OSIS standard. And then after some time, you say, oh, well, you know, let's add some feature, and so on and so forth. So that happened various times with WS Federation, WS Trust, and so on. So what I mean by that is that you may have WS Federation 2005 and 2007. Like, I should check the actual numbers, but that's what I mean. Like, there are small differences in terms of the kind of how the specification works, depending on the time in which you take the snapshot. For WS Trust, we have 1.3, but we have also some features of the 1.4, and so on and so forth. Does that make it clearer?
The standards are not backward compatible, though.
I'm sorry?
Standards are not backward compatible, are they, like, for example?
So, the question is if standards are backward compatible. Like, not necessarily. Let's say that if you take SAML 1.0 and SAML 2.0, you take two endpoints and they talk to each other, they are different. They are very different. But knowing that one endpoint supports one or supports the other is what allows you to do the right match. So potentially you could go on ADFS, turn on all the checkboxes that turn on all the endpoints. This would light up like a Christmas tree of all the possible endpoints, and then you could use whatever you want. Or instead, you could say, no, I want to support only WS Trust 1.3. And so you just check that one, and you check the one for example, Kerberos, because you don't want anything else. Also note, WS Trust is just active. You cannot use WS Trust in passive scenario. WS Federation, on the other hand, defines a binding for the passive, but the general idea, like the language, the way in which you do single sign-out and similar, you can also apply it in active. Great. Anybody else? Like, isn't that stuff awesome? Think of using a traditional way. Like, now you can finally model the capabilities of everybody, having everybody publish their own capability, the protocol that they need, and similar. And you can crawl this entire thing using tools. Like, classically, you'd have, to come here and find out what's the certificate, what's the endpoint, find out, maybe by probing, which version they are supporting. Instead, now, all this stuff may light up like this. I can't promise your mileage may vary, but at least in the best case, everything works beautifully. And instead, before this, the best case wasn't kind of as smooth. So forward. So how do we use STSs? Typically, one relying party knows one STS. And then is that one STS that, if necessary, Let's say that if the claims that we receive from that are not the ones that we like, we'll take care of everything else. Even if we are the owners, sometimes it still makes sense to factor your application with application and STS. Like, it can be literally an architectural choice to take some of the intelligence you would normally put in the app and put it in the STS. What do? You establish trust, of course. Like, you say, I want to trust that STS. And you can do a couple of other things, like trying to influence the process in which that STS is contacted, which usually means just attaching info that will be sent back and forth in that context. Federation. So I already asked about indulge me. How many of you know what is federation about? Almost everybody. Okay, it's not hard. Resource, user, IP, STS, FP, STS. I want that user to be able to access this resource, but he belongs to a different organization. So if I have a trust which has been established between this organization and this other organization, which in practice means this STS will accept tokens issued by this STS, then I have a chain that I can crawl for making the magic happen. So, oops, actually let me get back. So the flow is as follows. Here there is trust. User tries to get to the application. Browser types the application, enter. User is not authenticated. There's something in front of it which says, I'm sorry, but go here because it's a guy I trust, and please get something that proves that you authenticated him there. But I'm not authenticated here because I am an unknown. So I get actually forwarded to my place. Here I authenticate. Awesome. So I obtain a token. Then I use that token for authenticating here. I get a token which is transformed, and finally I can use it in the right place. At that point, like, I closed the circuit. Application doesn't know anything of all this stuff that was going on, just relied on this guy to make authentication happen, and it was right because this guy made authentication happen. That's great. So let's actually take a very quick look at how to make this in Windows Identity Foundation. Note, vast majority of cases, you would do this using ADFS. Now I'm using test STSs so that you can see how it works inside. But I'm not advocating that you do the same in your systems. So we are clear. So here, let me fire Visual Studio. The background is the beach under my house back in Italy. I shouldn't have made something that has such an emotional charge. But so let me create a new website. There is no trick. It's a default one. And here, HTTPS. How are we going to call it? Not a lot of fantasy. My relying party. I click OK. Visual Studio thinks a bit about it. This is a virtual machine, so it will need a bit of a warming up before starting to perform, but you guys are patient. And now I have my relying party. This is, in fact, for the time being, just a perfectly normal application. So what do I need to know now? Now I can come here, right-click, and as in your exercise, add STS reference. If I click on that, I get this wizard. I just say that I want a new STS in the project. Next. Finish. It will think about it for a bit. And then we now have one STS. As you can see here, the system added metadata from me. Tell us that we've been successful, good. And that's it. The only thing that changed is in the web config. Windows Identity Foundation added stuff to a web config specifically for us. Now, let's just add something for visualizing the token. So, for the time being, forget what I'm doing. You are not seeing what I'm doing. It will all become clear later. So, let's say that I go on the page of my ASP.NET app, and I drag in this control. You can easily download from the internet. This control allows us to take a look at the token as we receive it. So if now I hit F5, do you think about it? No, I want to go without debugging. And if I'm fast enough, yes. Okay. The browser is trying to get my website, right? As usual. And now I kind of froze time. This is a screenshot of the page. But behind the scenes, the system already sensed that the user is not authenticated and so redirected me to the internet provider. Let's see if it's true. It's true. And in fact, here we are in a different place. Later we'll see in the details how this stuff works. Anyway, here I type my super secure password. And I'm in my app. And here there's my token. Never mind the details so far. Just see that I have two types, name and role. I am Adam Carter. I am a manager, despite the ponytail. And here I have the issuer of every token. Where I also have the original issuer, which for the time being is exactly the same. Like, that's the source of claims. Good. So now, we said we want federation, right? So, by the way, I'm sure you have colleagues that do not have to do anything about security, but they do have to put authentication on their website. Is this simple enough for them? I can't hear you. Yes? Fantastic. Great. And they can't do damage because they just, like, it's read-only. They write one URL and that's it. Like, there is this happy anecdote. Happy. When I was back in Italy, I heard this interesting tale in which some consultant, some of you may relate, was working for a bank. And this consultant ended up being on looking at tables in production and saw a list of names with surnames which were, let's say, bad words in Italian. And so she thought, oh, this is terrible. Somebody put the test data in production. This is, I have to fix this. And so she basically dropped the table. Well, I am sure that in high school you met somebody who is unlucky enough to have a surname which sounds like a bad word. That was the case for all those customers. So she kind of dropped the tables in production, and they had like to spend a few days for going in the backups, retrieving them. So it was a big hassle. So with this stuff never happens because people that are not supposed to mingle with security data cannot do that. So small detail. Okay, we wanted to do federation, and we don't have an ADFS. So how do I demonstrate that? It's easy. But first, let me do one little modification because you'll see that in a moment. I want the background of this guy to be a different color, like, for example, red. Okay. So we want federation. That means that our relying party trusts an STS which trusts another STS. So I just come here and I add an STS to the STS in itself, so you can see it clearly. Like, it's bizarre, but it works. Create a new STS. Finish. Now it will think about it for a bit. Yes. And now what do we have? A rank party which trusts one STS, which trusts another STS. So let's just change it so that we can tell one from the other. So which color should we do this? Any preference?
Blue.
Perfect. So now it's blue. Now there is only one little thing that I have to modify, which is I just have to comment those couple of guys. Okay, so I'm just about to hit F5, but before doing that, I'd like you guys to tell me which color I'm going to see, which STS I'm going to see. This guy is red, this guy is blue. So let's vote. Who votes for red? 1, 2, 3, 4. Who votes for blue? Who votes for green? Ah, gotcha. So I will not torment the ones who didn't vote, but if you don't want to play, that's fine with me. But anyway, moment of the truth. Of course, it will not compile, so it will all be mote, but running, running, running. Browser, browser, browser. Blue. Congratulations to whoever said blue. So why was it blue?
Red actually sent it to blue.
I'm sorry?
Red sent it to blue.
Well, it was blue for the following reason. First, here the token is exactly the same. Because we came here. Let me get everything down. First, what we did, we created the relying party with no security whatsoever. Then we created an STS for that relying party. So we modified the relying party web config to use Windows Identity Foundation. And this guy had its own security, the login. And then we added an STS to this guy. So we outsourced the authentication from this guy. So now the page that I have here for authenticating is not engaged any longer, because it was used for the forms authentication. But now, instead, it outsourced its own authentication to this guy. Right? Yes, go ahead.
Could you still have both?
You do have both to some extent, because the flow is... Oh, okay, sorry. The question is, can you still have both? You have both to some extent, meaning that if we go back to our schema... Oops, not this one, but this one. Okay. So you are still running both, like the code behind of the STS runs in both. The only difference is that now the only like fixed point, the only rock bottom authentication happens here. This is the only guy who expects to see credentials. Like this guy instead expects to see SAML tokens. So they both run, but I see the UI only here. Because this kind of authentication doesn't need UI, just receives a token from this guy, which does not require user interaction. Which leads to a couple of considerations about the structure of security token services. So far, I wrote no code, correct? Like, what did I do? I just went here and added the default STS. The default STS, you may have had the chance to see during the exercises, doesn't do a lot. It just pulls out a couple of hard-coded claims and shove them in the output token. So that's exactly what happens here, both in this STS and in this other STS. In other words, our resource STS doesn't really process the claims that we are receiving, because so far we are just the default implementation. So let's change that. Let's write some code here that will process those claims. Again, this is purely for helping you guys to play and think about the scenario. Don't do that in production. Just doing that in case, protecting myself from lawsuits.
All I heard was do that in production.
Right. So here, let's take a look at the code of this STS. Actually, let's start from this guy. Here you have a classic structure of one custom STS. One custom STS will create a default page, which behind the scenes enforces the WS Federation protocol. We'll see in the next breakout how that works. And then here you have a bunch of classes which help you to do the STS job. So ignore those guys. This class, custom security token service configuration, just ties your class to a certain URL and a certain set of certificates and similar. So this is just like a way of making it concrete, like endpoint. And here we are talking about passive. We'll talk about active tomorrow. Instead, a custom security token service is the place where the interesting stuff takes place. So let's take a look at what we have out of the box. Maybe a bit zoom out. So let's see what we have. Let me close some of those, otherwise you may get a bit confused. So there are various things that you can do with STSs, various interesting things. But if you are forced to do the absolute minimal stuff, when you implement your own, you need to override those two functions. Methods, sorry. This method, getScope, is something which prepares your token issuance context. So it verifies that the relying party for which you are being asked to produce a token is a recognized one. It retrieves your signing key so that you know what you use for signing. It retrieves encryption keys for that specific relying party and decides if you have to encrypt or not encrypt, and so on and so forth. Get Outward Claims Identity, which is not the shortest name, but it's kind of descriptive, is instead the place where you put code for retrieving claims, for actually assigning the claim values. So here is what you get. You get a representation of the caller. Remember, at this point, the caller has been successfully authenticated. Otherwise, we would not be executing. Then you get the request. The request may contain interesting things that you may want to process, so you get it. And you get the scope, which is the one that you just built here. Like in the term of a sequence, this gets executed before this one. So what do we do in here? Here we do something extremely trivial. We create an output identity, which is just a claims identity. We shove a couple of hard-coded claims, name and role, and then we just go. Normally, what would we do here? We would be looking up the identity that we got in the principle, and then, according to the claims, retrieve claims values from outside, and then give them back. Because of this one, in this moment, is one, which flavor of STS? IP STS. Because this is the place where we perform authentication. So here, just for making things slightly more interesting, instead of manager, I'll give to the guy the role blue. Mysterious enough. Okay, so that's how the default works, and we are pretty happy with that. We don't want to do anything complex. So now let's go to the resource STS. Now, what's the job of a resource STS? We expect to receive the token that this guy made, or anybody else that we trust made, and somehow process it, like chew it somehow and do it. Now, the default implementation instead will blissfully ignore it, because it will be exactly the same as what we have seen so far. Oh. Claims identity. See? Exactly the same. So let's change it, but since I'm lazy, I believe I already said that. I will actually use a pre-built code, and I'll just walk you through that. So I should have it here, yes. Voila. So I will get here, comment the hard-coded claims. Okay, and I will paste the code here. So let me walk you through the code that I did here. And again, this stuff is absolutely trivial. It is just for you guys to get a feeling of how it works. So for the first thing, what do? I retrieve the incoming identity from the principal. The principal is a principal. So it's an iClaims principal. So its identity is an iClaims identity. Actually, it's an iIdentity, but if I cast iClaims identity. Then I use the magic formula that I used before for extracting the role. Why do I have single here? Because I could belong to many roles, right? So in one token, there's no law that says that you have a unique value for every type. You could have multiple instances. So here, this code is a bit like from there, but you see my point. So I get the value of role, and then I add to my output identity a new claim, which is still a role, but I'm transforming what I had before in a very sad fashion. I'm just appending one string in front of it for formally showing that I'm transforming it. Of course, here you could do all sorts of interesting things. So here we have one example of transformation. Just below, we have one example of pass-through. I know that there is a name in the token that I'm receiving, so I retrieve it. And once I have it, I create a new claim, because that's the only way in which I can actually add it. And I assign as value the value that I received. So that's the name of a guy. The type is the type that I received. But the only difference is this name original issuer. Since this is just a pass-through, I want to record that claim was not originally issued by me. I am just letting it go. And so here I am actually specifying that. Finally, brute force. Here I'm just adding a custom claim. I'm just throwing it there. A claim could be as simple as a random string like I'm doing here. Of course, normally you'd be more careful, like put it in a constant somewhere, making sure that constant is clear, that it doesn't change the wrong way, that you version it, the usual stuff. But you see my point. So at this point, I'm going to hit F5 again. So which color am I going to see now? How many are for red? How many are for blue? That will be blue, yes. Because I didn't change any of the authentication stuff. I just changed the content of the token. But you were not easily fooled. Good job. So now the system is starting. Let's hope it will compile. It compiled. Wow. I didn't close the browser. Okay. Yeah, I didn't close the browser. Let's try that again. Otherwise, we'll have to do the extreme problems, extreme solutions. Yeah, blue. Congratulations. Okay. So now, as you can see now, we have three different claims. We have transformed blue, which sounds very zen or very poetic. We have Adam Carter, which came through, and we have just a value. And the issuers are correctly identified as every time my resource STS, because it's the one that signed. Whoever puts the signature gets to be the issuer. But this one was a pass-through, so we actually get this stuff in the middle. So in like a few minutes, you got a whirlwind tour of how federation works. Questions?
So within the SPS implementation that we have, there is a default page and there is a login page. Login page is for authentication, default page is for giving the token or SPS one, right? I see that there is a redirect. Is there a way we could eliminate that redirect from login to default? And if, can I implement one page where on pre-render I can check if user is authenticated and just do federated authentication and not redirect? So the cookie that is being issued by login page, can I not just pass it without redirecting?
So the question is about the passive STS template, and is there any way to making it work in a different way? And the answer is absolutely yes. Like there, we are using a plain vanilla forms authentication, which entails a redirect to forms login taking place, giving you a token, and then going ahead. That's just a choice, but nothing, absolutely nothing, prevents you to write your own authentication system. So if you want to do the same in Kerberos, for example, like you would have a web page which has maybe at IIS level integrated off, and the only page of a website would be the STS, for example. At that point, you don't need to perform any authentication. Or if you have your own custom way of authenticating users, by all means, whatever works. That's what I meant before when I said the STS in itself is very often decoupled from the mechanism of authentication. As long as when you get to that method, which we just modified, you are authenticated, and I have a way of telling who the user is so that I can go and source all my claims, we are fine.
And it doesn't have to be iClaims identity. I could have any other identity also from the get-output claims identity.
I don't understand the question. Actually, I think it has to. Let's say that, okay, the question is if the input to IN claims output, that one, thank you. I'm slightly dyslexic after 5 years of doing that. It actually has to be. Let's say that the pipeline will take care of doing that. Like in the last breakout of the day, we'll have a chance of actually seeing where all this stuff takes place. The STS pipeline is slightly different, but you'll see that we go to great lengths to ensure that once we get to the code, the current principle contains an iClaims principle, even if we didn't go to one token service. Like we may just be able to do that as is. And, of course, we are a bit late, but we have to push forward. Alrighty. So that's federation. Now, yes, it's all very nice. Now let's talk about the famous home realm discovery. The situation we had before was exactly this. Red, blue. Resource, STS, identity provider, STS. Now, what happens when we add to the picture another identity provider? Well, that's the very reason for which we started talking about this guy in the first place. So the flow is like the one that we said before. So let's say we have a user which belongs in here, lands in here, gets redirected here. And now, how do I decide from here where should I send this guy? There's not a single answer, but to say that depending on the constraints of your scenario, depending on the things that you know about your scenario, you may take different ways. But let's actually see that in practice. Now, well, before getting there, let's talk about the solution. As you will see in a moment, like in a moment, in a couple of hours, WS Federation is a protocol which, in the end, basically just adds, like makes redirects back and forth, and it talks to every endpoint just by appending certain parameters to the query, in which it tells to every endpoint what you expect from others. Like, for example, there is one parameter which says, I want you to sign in, another parameter that says, the token is for that realm, and so on. So there is this special parameter, WHR, which stands for WSF Federation Home Realm, which helps me to specify which one is the home realm. So if, for example, I know it at the relying party level, like I know who I want, then I can just specify that parameter in my web config, and then when I redirect to the resource STS, the resource STS will also get that information. And thanks to that information, it will select one specific relying party. Of course, the issue with that is static, and also means that that relying party is completely dedicated to that identity provider, which kind of like breaks the flow. However, it makes sense for multi-tenant situations in which you actually spawn different instances. So imagine that you are selling software as a service, and your customer is customer1.myservicename.com and customer2.myservicename.com. Those are actually two relying parties. In that case, it actually makes sense for you to go web config of one and the other and pre-select the actual identity provider, customer one or customer two, in the web config. However, you can also try to handle that dynamically. Let's say that once you land to the resource STS, there may be things that you know that you can use for taking the decision. One thing that you can use, which is like the brute force approach, is a big list box with all the possible identity providers. You guys laugh, but in academia, that's very, very common. Let's say that I was just 1 month ago in Munich at the European Identity Conference. There was one entire session about somebody showing their way of resolving this problem, and that was exactly it. Like, they gave long list of all the possible identity providers. Not always viable in a commercial environment, because you may not want to know that, like, the customer may not like to see that their name is together with their competitor. Because even if it's multi-tenant, is isolated, is very well separated, well, you know how people are distrustful, and makes sense. And of course, the more you go up to the security scale, like defense, government, and similar, it's a no-no. You cannot tell with whom you are being federated. So you can use other tricks, like, for example, looking at the IP class of the request. If you like certain big companies, they buy IP ranges. So if you see that the request comes from that IP, well, maybe you can have a table and just reflect that. In general, there is not a single solution. What's important is you have to think about it. And from our perspective, so Windows Identity Foundation Workshop, the place where you can do these decisions is this redirecting to identity provider. This is actually one event which is raised by Windows Identity Foundation a teeny bit before actually making your redirect. Whatever logic you have for deciding which identity provider you want to point to, you can actually enforce it implementing this guy. We'll see that in a moment. There is one last trick which I'm telling you about, even if it's not completely standard, but it's a very useful one, which is you may specify the WHR at the very beginning. So let's say that you go to customer one and you say, dear customer one, when you call our service, when you land on our website, make sure that to the URL you append question mark WHR equal the address of your identity provider. If the relying party supports this, it's not mandatory from the standard, but many do support that, then the relying party, before sending stuff to the resource STS, will append this WHR, hence there will be an automatic selection. so that everybody self-select its own identity provider, which works pretty well. So let's just take a very quick look on how to implement that. It's actually pretty straightforward. So if we go back to our system, we go to our resource STS. We add the global ASAX, which is the place where we implement that functionality. A new item starts with G, global application class. Here I have my powerful snippet. And here I do something like absolutely trivial. Here I'm doing something as simple as, so I'm implementing this redirecting to identity provider. The fact that I write like this means that ASP.NET will automatically assign this handler to this module. Like it's just a matter of name. Very, very straightforward. Here I just look if in my query string there is a WHR. Somebody specified a WHR. If there is, I just change the URI of my identity provider in the message to whatever was specified here. Done. Not that hard. Now I have to specify somewhere all this stuff. So if I go on my relying party, web config, now the element that I'm touching now, you'll see it slightly later, the various meanings, but here let me just add home realm equal, and this time I want to select, oops, I went ahead of myself, because so far we are still federated. So I wouldn't need to do that. I have the yet to add an STS. Anyway, let's see if it works. Now we should just have exactly what happened before. Oops. I apologize about this. Ah, yeah, because I'm sending to myself. I'm telling that the home realm is myself, so it actually loops, which is not good. May induce vertigo. Okay. Okay. Blue. So nothing changed. Like now I'm just reinforcing what I've been already doing. Now let's actually make things slightly more interesting. So I go back on my resource STS, and guess what I'm doing? I'm adding another STS. Create a new STS. Now it will think about it. Okay. Yes. So it changed the web config of our relying party STS. So let's change the color of this new STS, and let's do it like the one in the picture. Let's say green goes with my eyes. So now, what is the situation? Let me get back to the picture. Now I have exactly the following. My RP trusts RP underscore STS. Here I have RP STS underscore STS. Here I have RP underscore STS dot underscore STS 1. Right? So, what's the current relationship between those guys? I've just run the wizard which creates this guy. So what do you think that would happen if I would hit F5 now? Exactly. Simply because I just overrode whatever was written here, despite all the things that I did for making the Homerun discovery. Now I overrode. So now, let's hit ESC, discard. Let's go back here. Let's make sure that our resource STS has the right web config. And it has. So now, if I go back on my relying part, I go on my web config. And here I'm actually indicating the has Homerun the blue STS. And in my resource STS, I added this function that I've said before. So I'm asking you, if I hit F5 now, which color am I going to see? So how many vote for blue? OK. How many vote for green? Well, in this moment, the WHR, the proposal was if you flip over the WHR. For the time being, it's pointing to the blue one. So anybody would expect the red one to show up again? Red one is lost. OK. So let's try it. Control F5 and blue, despite, whoop, because of course it's just low, but it worked. If now I go back to the web config overlying part, and here I put 1, what do you expect would happen? Everybody green? Nobody blue?
No, it's blue.
It's blue? Let's see. And it's green. It's green because now we finally have this little mechanism for switching. Absolutely. Like the code that I have to repeat the question. Can it be made dynamic instead of doing configuration? By all means. Like the code that I've shown here in the global ASAX can be anything, anything, anything you want. Literally anything you want. So if you have a page where you are listing all the identity providers, you can go there. If you have some heuristics that find out, you can have this stuff as well. As long as just before you actually make the redirect, you change this stuff, you're done. Note that if you're using a packaged product, the packaged product will provide whatever. So let me see if there is something that cannot absolutely be skipped. Otherwise, we can just. So the authentication assurance part is pretty much the same, but instead of sending WHR, you send another parameter. And this other parameter will tell to the STS the level of authentication. You use the same mechanism, the same, exactly the same. Multiple credential types, it's similar, but doesn't use parameters. That's to say that typically different credential types means different endpoints in the STS, which means different addresses. So you just manage exactly in the same way. You need a criteria for using different addresses. And for this stuff, you know what? We can do it after the break.